Hi, and welcome to another episode of Ask Clever Over Coffee, How AI Built This, with special guest this week, Mike Louis Lewis. How you doing, Mike?
Good. Good to be here. Glad we get to have our little AI conversation, finally, after just 1 week.
After just 1 week. Well, we really appreciate you coming in today and meeting with us. So today, we're going to cover a lot of different topics that are all about AI, and it's great to have somebody in the expertise field of data.
Yeah, a lot of data, and a lot of sort of the nuance of the AI, you know, as we have a lot of conversations about the very surface level, what can we do with AI to get into that granularity of, you know, how can we actually understand human behavior at the same time?
Sure. So first we want to just start off, Mike, is just like learning a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got here.
To this seat or to this state? Two different stories. The way I'm originally from Chicago. I actually came to Minnesota because it's one of those few states where you can actually play good high-level hockey. The way I got to this seat was a couple of 5-6 years ago. I come from a sales and marketing background.
Okay.
And there was a period about 6-7 years ago where I saw that there were a lot of really smart technical founders building a lot of really cool ad tech, martech tools. And one in particular was in the world of digital marketing. And when I had a very cursory understanding of what he was doing at the time, but the more and more he explained what he was doing, I understood he was trying to understand literally behavioral intent just through digital behavior. And I said, okay, tell me more.
Right.
And so through the years, we've come to build Click360, which is, I'm assuming the next question, it's a marketing analytics platform that's meant to understand behavioral intent. Most specifically, what are people trying to tell us via their behaviors, their online behaviors, that we can use AI to say, oh, I understand. They're trying to tell us this. They're looking for this item. They're trying to convert to this outcome, right?
Got it.
Really, what we're trying to understand is the idea of buyer intent.
Got it.
Convert to revenue, who's not?
So when you guys were working on this and coming up with the idea, kind of break down like that process where the light bulb moment came off for you, like, what was that like?
Well, the light bulb belongs to my co-founder, Michael. So Mike and Michael, sometimes confusing. He was working in a rather large business where they were trying to understand if they were going to spend all this money sourcing hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of leads, which ones should make it to the sales team versus which ones should stay with the marketers. Because effectively, it's the old argument. If we start passing every single lead to sales, well, we're just going to inundate them and swamp them, and they're going to get really mad at marketing. Conversely, marketing's going to say, well, we're doing all this to generate leads for you and they're not closing. Why aren't these leads closing? So the light bulb moment for Michael was, you know, if he could capture the problem generally was most tools will capture a part of a journey or a certain time frame, 7 days, 30 days, 90 days, but they can't capture all behaviors across all channels, all platforms, all devices. So his light bulb moment was, I need to be able to see the entire end-to-end customer journey because I need to understand the entirety of that pattern of behavior and when it converts to revenue, what those patterns were. And of course, I'm drawing patterns on the table. I don't know if they can see that at home. That helps the AI understand, okay, these behaviors are more valuable than these behaviors to revenue generation. Therefore, they should be elevated as such in, you know, the algorithms or whatnot. So it was his light bulb. I just looked at it and said, holy cow, if you can do that, that's huge.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, my background with Ask Clever, you know, we are AI marketing lead generation. So I'm very, very familiar with what you just touched on about generating a lot of leads versus the quality of the leads for the sales team. That's the space that our company lives in on a daily basis. And we use AI in our data to really do the machine learning to really hone in on the right type of customer for each of our clients.
Right.
Now with Click360, you talk about the behavior points. Can you break down a little bit more for everyone about what are the data points that you guys are monitoring or using as part of your algorithm? If you're like willing to disclose some top secret stuff here.
I'll give the high levels because I think a lot of this conversation too is about what is AI and how is it benefiting us versus what is the scary component and should we be concerned, right?
Okay.
And to your point, exactly what you were talking about, it's the idea of understanding how to use AI to begin the conversation. And what we were, or what Michael was building with Click 360 is how do we take that conversation and then understand the nuance to your point, which tells us when certain people should be engaged. So it's one part deep learning, which is, as you know, is a subsection of the machine learning. We wanted to take the human inference out of it and let the machine or the AI understand behaviors. And then to your point about the things that it's measuring all, well, call them the clicks. I mean, we're called Click 360 for a reason. It's measuring all the clicks on a website and then using a little bit of natural language processing to say, hey, these are the behaviors this person is exhibiting, and they're doing 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, when we see people do 1, 2, 3, 4, we understand they're a certain percentage of the way down their customer journey towards conversion. There's also a really good chance they're looking for 5. That would be the next number in the pattern. And so two things happen from what we're doing is we're saying we understand that they want to see 5 and that that will increase their probability of conversion. So to the measurements, that could be anything from they've clicked on this ad, then downloaded this white paper, then looked at this case study, or, you know, they've come from this channel, then this channel, then this channel. And that's where the pattern starts to emerge that, hey, this person is doing something that we've seen convert to revenue.
Very interesting. So when you're talking about these behavior patterns, in my mind, it's starting to click between the LLM, which is the large language module, versus the business rules. And there is a big difference because I know from previous episodes, if you want to watch, is that about AI, there's a big difference. You know, there's business rules, which is just everyday learning.
Right.
And then what is the machine learning part? So, you know, like the follow-up question for you would be like, what's the machine learning part for what you guys are doing at, you know, Click 360?
I like to say I'm not the technologist in this relationship. I'm the applicationist. So Michael is the one who understands sort of the sausage making, and I understand where it goes.
You got it.
But so to where the machine learning is, I want to tell the machine what to optimize for and let it learn how to do that. The subsection of machine learning that we're using is the deep learning model is saying, we're not necessarily going to inform what you are going to look for, but when you see that thing, then you're going to optimize for that behavior.
Okay.
So, like I said, I'm not the technologist.
Right.
But the idea is just to understand, again, that behavioral intent. Are they showing us something that is going to, the outcome is going to be the desired event that we want? And then can we allow the deep learning to optimize for that?
So now, like, if you guys had any, like, breakthrough moments over the course of the last few years of, like, going, holy crap, we're onto something really good here. This is really working. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
That's a really fun question. So the way I explain the platform is it's at the intersection of attribution, segmentation, and predictive analytics. Any one of those are very cool tools by themselves. But when you combine all three, that's when you can start to predict who is going to convert to what outcome with a certain level of confidence. And I laugh because the way it was built was to segment customers on a website into probabilities to convert to revenue.
Yes.
And it wouldn't shock anybody in the sales, marketing, RevOps world to know that only a certain percentage of website visitors are going to convert to revenue.
Right.
But the fun thing was the way Michael built this, he was able to say, all right, of everybody on the website, here's the probabilities by segment, by cluster. And then just in the last 6 to 9 months, he's gotten the platform to a point where it can actually predict outcomes with an 81% accuracy.
Wow.
So that
81%?
81%. It's a small sample size now, and we're extrapolating out to see if, you know, we can prove that out across additional, you know, verticals, industries, et cetera. This was more of an e-commerce use case. But yeah, when he said he could predict it with 81%, I said, well, why wouldn't we go to like 99%? And he goes, that's not a good data model. Of course, I don't know what he's talking about. You can prove that 99% of people won't buy from you, right? Because only 1% buy from anyways. But to be able to predict, you know, sort of 8 out of 10 correctly and the channels that improve that probability, I was floored.
So when you guys are applying this technology that you guys now have, walk us through a little bit more, like, where do you see this most relevant or most useful for your clients and what you guys are doing?
It's a fair question. It's a big question. A fair question. When it was originally built, it was built for the complex customer journey. Right. And so you're talking about somebody that's coming from multiple channels over multiple time periods, and there's maybe multiple decision makers.
Are you talking like B2B or B2C?
It's a good question. Also, it's both.
Okay.
And the ultimate use case, I believe, is the B2B use case where you have multiple variables involved in the customer journey.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe even multiple personas. And you've got a RevOps leader or a marketer who's trying to say, if I'm going to commit dollars to anything, where am I going to commit those dollars to? And where do those dollars best return? Right? Versus a lot of what we talk about in AI today. And there's nothing wrong with the rules-based ways of doing it. But if they want to have confidence that this dollar is going to perform better in a certain area than someplace else, right? We just want to give them an information that says, if you do this, you can expect an outcome of this versus if you do this, you can expect an outcome of this. So the reason I say it's both an e-com and a B2B problem, e-commerce is sort of similar in that it's a much shorter time period.
Yeah.
But think about a high price ticket item that you've bought recently, $500,000. It's not, hey, that's cool, click, buy.
Yeah.
Right? It's more of a, that's cool, I'm going to go learn about it. I'm going to come back. And then I'm going to see something, and I'm going to go out and look at more of that. And then I'm going to keep looking for social proof. And then I get hit with a retargeting ad. I was like, oh, that's right, I forgot about that. And then I come back. And so it's this, it's not a dance, but it's definitely like a come and go where it's not an immediate conversion. And for a marketer, it goes, do I want to retarget everybody just because they started a cart? Or do I want to retarget the ones who are most likely to convert?
Now, when you're saying like $500,000, like the what immediately comes to mind for me would be like if you were looking at buying a house or maybe a boat. I mean, I know a couple RVs go that price these days.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are the things that I'm thinking about. Like, are you looking at those types of scenarios that aren't necessarily an e-commerce cart item, but they're still a purchasing item. Also, I mean, people, obviously the car industry, the auto industry is very large and has a lot of different price points along that. And our journey when I know a lot of people, when they're thinking about a brand that they want to buy or a particular place that they are looking for or within, they're going online, they're doing the research, same with the house. Are you tracking those types of journeys and behaviors?
Yeah, and it's, I think the newest number is something like 85 or 90% of the purchasing decision has been made long before somebody reaches out.
Yeah.
And so to your question about who is this beneficial for, it's folks where, you know, that portion of the journey has been completed before they reach out, and you just need to know, hey, this person's more qualified than this person. Not more qualified to convert, but behaviorally.
Sure.
Right? And to your point, unfortunately, you think about, I think real estate's an awesome example, by the way, because you don't find a house and then just buy it, right?
Right, right.
It's a big decision. And unfortunately, like, there are so many people looking for houses so often and reaching out and asking for more information. And in the world of sales, and especially B2B, it's, hey, can you send me information on this house?
Right.
Now, as a realtor or the salesperson in this conversation, you have to decide, is this person looking at this house? Are they qualified? Do they have a mortgage yet? Have all of these things happened already to say this person is a qualified buyer? Or is this, you know, the first of 15 inquisitions today? Inquisitions? That wasn't the word.
Inquiries?
Inquiries. Not common lands.
There's no wars going on.
Which of the 50 inquiries are you going to respond to today? Another interesting use case was franchises. A lot of people reach out asking, inquiring about owning a franchise. Only very few of them are qualified to be able to do so. And so these franchisors have to go through and manually qualify every single person versus understanding, hey, this person has completed the behavior that says they're going to convert to revenue. I'm going to spend my time here first.
Wow.
Not saying ignore everybody. I'm just saying, where do we spend our time first?
Got it. So what's unique about this podcast is I am the co-host along with ChatGPT.
Yes.
Who's also learned a lot about you. We've done a lot of research. We've plugged away. And we do have a few things that are going to be different on this episode. But first, I would like to throw it to ChatGPT, who also has a question for you.
Love it.
Hello. Mike, so with your expertise on the business development side, can you walk us through the sales lifecycle at Click360 and explain how AI is leveraged at each stage to enhance decision-making and the customer engagement?
I mean, I could speak to Click360, and I think it would just be interesting to speak to SaaS in general, because I think that's the really good use case. So there's a lot of tools out there for business development and meant to help salespeople convert more deals. And where we took Click360 differently from most is to say, so let's talk business development. You start with prospecting, which is where AskClever is doing a lot of good work.
That's right. That's right.
How do we surface the people who look like the kinds of people that will buy from us? Once they come to the website, that's where the Click360 conversation will begin. The question was, how do we walk through the business development cycle or improve?
Yeah, just how do you leverage AI with just engaging with your customers?
So yeah, effectively, fair question. You would leverage the AI in a couple of different ways. First, to understand, is this somebody who is top of funnel still? Have they exhibited a top of funnel behavior? So we want to keep them in a marketing nurture, right? So we can continue to move them down the funnel. Or have they exhibited something, say, hey, when we talk about BANT in sales, do they have budget authority, negotiation and timing? Are they exhibiting bottom of funnel behavior? So we would want to split those apart and use the AI to say, we understand these people are in cluster one. They're about 10% likely to convert. So we're going to leave them in a marketing nurture versus these folks. They're hovering around that 50, 60% likely to convert. So while they may not be ready for sales yet, maybe we do a different, more targeted,
right?
AI outreach to them. Maybe it's got more personalization because we know what they've been searching for. We know what they've been responding to. We have some more information. And then further down the funnel, like at that 80, 90% likely to convert, depending on the business and how you sell in general, now we use the AI to say, we know this person is very likely to convert, and we know the channel that's most likely to move them to the next stage of their journey.
Yeah.
So we will actually leverage that information and say, now is when we send them case study 4. Because they've shown us 1, 2, 3, 4, case study 4 is thing 5, and now we know how to engage with them based on where they're at.
So, quick story here. When I was in college, I had a short stint as a retail attendant at a large department store. And if you've ever worked in retail, and this goes for restaurants as well, you're taught to kind of size up the customers who are walking in the room. Yeah. You're taught to look at and profile which ones would be more likely to buy. So this would be the real world experience versus the online, what you're doing. And one thing, like looking back, when I had that experience working in different retail stores, it was interesting to have different trainers and different managers have their experience and how they do it, because everybody does it slightly differently depending on which store you work for and what culture. And one thing I noticed, looking back, is there's definitely some bias, like depending on what brand and what type of profile. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but we all had our perceptions of who was going to buy or spend the most money.
Yeah.
And that's who you spent the most time with. Right.
Right.
So then I'm sitting here thinking, and listening to you, and I was like, I'm remembering that experience, and I was like, okay, does the program, your algorithms, do they have any built-in biases, or how does that work, or to prevent bias, or how does that work overall?
This is a really good topic for AI in general, and it makes me think of a couple. There's an influencer out there named Josh Brown who talks about the salespeople who can recognize earlier on in the conversation what somebody might be looking for. And he's talking about, he was training for a marathon, and he said the best salesperson he ever met was somebody who, when he walked into their store, they recognized that, I think it was his knees hurt or something, like they could see it and they understood what he was looking for.
Yeah.
Versus, to your point, you see all these fun video memes out there of a car salesman going to the person who's nicely dressed with the nice shoes and the nice jewelry on, and assuming that person is the person that can buy the car.
Right.
When the person who's just dressed normally happens to be the person who has the affluence. So bias in the AI conversation, as you know, is a big deal. And,
right.
And it's affected a lot of decision-making platforms through the year. The year is plural. The reason why we went to that deep learning algorithm was to try to remove the bias.
And how do you do that?
So instead of coming up with rules based, and so I don't know why I keep drawing on the table like it's going to give the answers out.
if we had the VR, I'm sure this would work for the VR augmented reality part.
So rules-based marketing has human inference. So we're going to assume that this person is going to be more likely to purchase than this person because they come from a certain size business, or they have a certain title, or they're shopping for a certain thing. And then when you talk about the segmentation component, most platforms will segment based on demographic, geographic, psychographic, things of that nature.
Right.
So you're saying we think men or women of a certain affluence, of a certain region, are more likely to buy a certain product.
Right.
And that's what we teach in the machine learning is here's what we believe to be true.
Mm-hmm.
The reason Michael went to the deep learning was he wanted to take that human inference out of it and say, we don't care who you are, what you look like, where you are, or anything, you know, that could identify you as a person.
Okay.
So removing the bias, we just want to see the pattern that creates revenue. And it doesn't tell us anything more about who a person is. The only thing that influences how likely someone is to convert is the behavior.
Interesting. So when I was working out of college in Las Vegas, I was at
place to be.
This really nice bar and restaurant called the Voodoo Lounge, Voodoo Cafe on top of the Rio. This is back in when the Rio was really cool. And when we were up there, so in the in Las Vegas, in the gaming industry, they rank your VIPs,
yeah,
1 through 10. And the biggest whales, which means the people who spend the most money, what I found, you know, and I'm coming from the Midwest, I'm down in Las Vegas, this is all brand new to me, and what was so interesting is the highest valued person, because they would know that, they track that by their club card. So when they book a reservation at the restaurant, you know immediately coming in who the buyer intent is, who is going to spend the most money. Yep. And the whales, every single time, kid you not, were the people wearing sneakers, white t-shirts, wife beaters. They were not wearing the Gucci or the Prada or any of the name brand anything.
Right.
They were literally the most simple looking people. And that was their MO. Why? Because they had so much, you know, what they call today the FU money.
Yeah. And they don't want to be pinpointed as the person with money because then everyone's going to hound them.
That's right.
And interestingly, on the bias there is, you know who has the most money because of the player card, but you don't know necessarily which casino they're going to frequent on that trip or which game they're going to play.
Correct.
Or how much they're going to spend. And those would be some of the variables in the bias that, you know, at least for what Click360 is doing, we're trying to remove and just say, if they show up on Thursday at 5 o'clock on Delta and Terminal 2, then we think they're going to spend this much money at this table in this casino. That's that behavioral recognition and trying to remove that bias and just say, I don't necessarily know that this is the whale. However, behaviorally, sure looks like it.
Got it. And would that even translate to, let's say, when you're buying your airplane ticket and you're looking at going to Vegas, you know, so we all buy our tickets and sometimes we buy our airline tickets based off a brand.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, well, we like Delta over the other brand. I don't know. Or doesn't matter about the brand, but necessarily where you want to sit in the airplane or how you want to get into the airplane. Yeah. You know, so all those buying decisions and, you know, the algorithms that go along with that, like for me myself, like would I upgrade on this trip or do I sit wherever and take the random, you know? And like what I have found for myself is if I'm doing a business trip, I don't really care where I sit, but if I'm going on vacation, I'm in vacation mode, I kind of want to like do the extra because that's the whole point. Is like I'll do extra on a personal vacation way more than on a business trip where you have a certain budget. You got to show your expenses. So.
Right. I think the airline industry is a great example because, I mean, in marketing in general, you have to have some brand loyalties. There's some things that are just intrinsic knowledge in an industry. I know that if somebody is going to fly first class, they're probably going to enjoy a meal or a fine drink. There's just things that you will know. But one of the use cases I think that's really neat for AI is in not called the upsell, the upcharge, but if I know who you are and I know what you like ahead of time, I know what to offer you. And there are tools out there that will do like incentive-based offers. If someone comes in from a certain channel, I will offer them a certain discount. So the airlines is interesting in the sense, you know, if you're going to make it a sale or marketing customer journey would be, if they've done this thing and this thing and this thing, I know that what they want to do next is this piece. And you can start to offer them those frills and extras.
Which is why they have the Sky Miles or all the loyalty programs. You know, same with the casinos. They do the same thing, right? They know approximately if you stay this amount of days, you're going to spend more money. Or if you spend this much time at a table, you're more likely the house is going to win. You know, so that's the whole goal, is that they can see all of those data points and then just try everything in their power to hit those metrics to keep up those KPIs.
Yeah, and that's where I think, you know, we don't have to talk about this, you know, super nuanced technology in Click 360. A lot of it is that, you know, inherent domain knowledge. Like you just said, if I know if someone's going to do this, then they're twice as likely to do this. So I'm going to offer them that component, right?
And right.
If they're staying 7 days, I'm going to offer them a spa package because, you know, 85% of the time that happens, that works. We don't need a Click 360 to measure that. We just look at historical documents and say, everyone who stays 7 times, 85% of the time, they want a spa package.
Right. I know in Vegas, going back to that example, they knew that if you were a high roller and you came in with your girlfriend, usually, and you're sitting down and you're spending $100,000 or $200,000 at a play at a time, that they know that they need to keep the woman busy. And so they will do everything from making sure that they have the highest end retail stores.
Yeah.
They want to make sure they have the best spa. They want to make sure they have the best pool, whatever it takes. So there's no distractions for the player. So the player can play and both parties are equally happy. Yeah. And I know, like, I was in the car rental business for a while and the casinos love to rent out the cars to certain types of people.
Yep.
So they could do day trips while the player keeps playing.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean,
Click 360.
Click 360 would want, I try not to talk about it like it's the silver bullet, or whatnot. It wants to get much more into the, a lot less of the if then, and a lot more of the, you know, A plus B plus C. Okay, we can predict an outcome. But like you were saying, there is some a predictive nature to, and inherent, like a domain knowledge to, we know that if we do this, this will happen. We don't need a Click 360 to measure that. Right. If there is a scenario in, let's keep going in Vegas. If a hotelier knows that, you know, having the significant other on a day trip to wherever increases spending by 25% because that's historically what's always happened. Great. Where Click 360 comes in, and unfortunately, this is where COVID was a great analogy, sort of a pattern breaker. Patterns of the past do not predict patterns of the future, especially when the pattern changes.
Yeah.
And so what we were trying to do is always be able to measure and change with the pattern of behavior that, as it changes. So if, for example, sending the significant other on a day trip away from the casino and, you know, your whale just decides to up and walk away from the table in the middle of the round.
Right.
That's a change in pattern, and that's a problem because what always was no longer is. And when you think about like a B2B SaaS conversation, when a competitor enters the market, we have a new pattern. Somebody changes pricing, we have a new pattern. Somebody offers a new capability, we have a new pattern. So that was where we wanted to get, this goes back to the human inference and the rules-based marketing. We had to get away from that if-then conversation because humans are imperfectly perfect, or flip it around, perfectly imperfect.
We right, right, right.
Our behaviors every day, we change our minds. Brand loyalty is great because we can, you know, expect people to continue to shop with us, but the pattern of how they do that may change.
Sure. Sure. So with that also comes, you know, knowing, you know, is this really for big business or do small and medium sized businesses now have access to the same tools that large corporations have basically been using for a long time?
Oh, that's a really good question too. You got a lot.
When you came on the show, what did you expect?
A whole list full. you posed the right question, which is, does this sort of democratize data?
Right.
And I think I even said to you, it's a little joke. We have a Robin Hood complex, right? We want to take data that would otherwise be anonymized and sold back to you as an audience and give you some actual information, actionable information you can use to affect your own business.
Right.
So to your point where maybe somebody has to have a $250,000 tech stack to do that and they're, you know, in the blue chip and they have that money, great, fine. That's probably what you should do. And you've got the marketer that can back it up, that can build out those pipelines and funnels. And
right.
We were much more built in the, I would call it the somewhere above, you know, a small business. And I know everyone has a different definition of enterprise. But the place where the business is spending enough money that it's painful enough that they want to understand where that money is best allocated.
Got it.
So that was a long answer. Yes. It's more for, it's less for the company that has, you know, the gobs and gobs and millions to spend on tech stack, and more just wants to know, hey, I'm spending $10,000 a month trying to generate leads. Am I doing it right? Are these the right places to spend it? Where could I do better?
So like, what if you had an Airbnb? And, you know, it's a decent size investment. Maybe you have a cabin up north, or maybe it's even just like a mansion in downtown Minneapolis.
Because I have two of those.
All right. And you are, you know, doing your best to fill your Airbnb.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, there's peak seasons and off seasons for every type of business, no matter what you're doing.
Right.
And, you know, you're a small business operator. Are you able to use this buyer intent? Is it able, this technology able to be used for those types of businesses, or is this more of a large language model for, you know, bigger businesses? Like if you had a big e-commerce or Shopify store.
There is definitely a depth and breadth to the conversation. I think if we talk about an Airbnb rental, there's probably a marketer or the owner themselves could probably do enough to fill it throughout the year without having to go super down the rabbit hole of, well, of these inquiries, which ones do I pay the most attention to? We were much more in the space of if you're generating so much activity that you need to be able to understand the differences in the activities,
yeah,
or if you want to be able to prioritize, that was a big deal when we first got started was Michael, the founder, would always say, if you can call every lead every day, great, why not? But if you can't, and you need to be able to prioritize your efforts because, you know, bandwidth is finite, it fits a lot more into that scenario. So, you know, we talk about AI as augmented intelligence. Human plus AI makes better decisions, right?
Okay.
I don't know if we talked about that, but it's something I say. The idea is let the AI, which typically is just an automation of a mundane human task, let it do a lot of that sleuthing for you so that you can focus on the meat that you need to focus on. So that was really long-winded, which is normal for me, but it's just to say we're trying to alleviate a lot of the search and scatter and just sort of surface the insights needed to make the decisions. And so those types of businesses tend to be a little bit larger, but not necessarily, you know, those massive blue chips.
Okay. Yet. All right. ChatGPT, do you have a follow-up question for Mike here?
I sure do. Which types of businesses or industries stand to benefit the most from implementing Click360s? And is the AI-driven customer engagement solutions and why?
Well, the AI, okay. So the industries that stand to benefit most, again, are those ones that are actually, you know, trying to generate a bunch of inbound traffic. And they're going to be, you know, digitally focused first and foremost. So being that I've been in sales for too long, if the customer journey is predominantly offline, there's not a lot of value here. And if it's a lot of relational selling, there's not a lot of value here. The businesses that benefit the most are the ones who are trying to use the website as the gateway to the customer journey. So while not the entire revenue generating journey is going to be on-site, a good predominance of it will be. And then the benefits they're going to see would be, you know, just again, allocation of budget, where are we going to spend it? How do we, resource manage? When does marketing take it? When does sales take it? When does customer success take it? When do we need to get reinvolved because somebody else might convert? So yeah, I don't know if that was the entire question. ChatGPT is throwing me today with the way they're like, the way they're lining up the words. I thought we got our language models much better.
ChatGPT is a little wordy right now. But as far as just industries in general, you know, are there, you know, automotive or et cetera, is there a specific type of industry?
It's going to be e-commerce stores with a larger ticket item, you know, think like furniture, electronics, gaming technology, things like that. Definitely SaaS businesses, which is we are one, so why not eat our own dog food? And, you know, John, to your point earlier, I think real estate and automotive are interesting just because of the volume of inquiries they receive, and just need to be able to prioritize, you know, where people spend efforts.
You know, and I live a large part of my life on the socials. And I see a lot of social media entrepreneurs, you know, and that means influencers, home-based businesses.
That's interesting.
And so one thing that I was thinking about while we were here talking is I know a lot of creators who create digital courses.
Yep.
In a variety of different industries and topics. And definitely one of the challenges when you're a solopreneur or an influencer, or you're trying to figure out where do I spend my time with which person who's actually not a tire kicker, somebody who actually wants the tools that you're providing and is willing to pay, because oftentimes these courses aren't cheap. These courses are like $1,000 to $5,000. So is that also somebody that could benefit from using this technology?
You laid it out really well. It's somebody who, you know, they can't scale themselves. They are a solopreneur and there's one of them. And so if they're going to spend their time, where are they going to spend it? You also got me thinking about the social media influencers. On the flip side of that conversation is the influencer model is I charge you per eyeball that I affect, right?
Right.
Well, on the flip side of that, the marketer or the RevOps leader says, well, shouldn't I have a model where I can pay based on the money you generate? Right. And you have a question that I know we want to get into. If you want to just ask it, I can hold on to this thought.
Well, I mean, the model for that is called affiliate marketing, right?
Yeah.
And I know with different clients I've had in the past, absolutely every business owner or marketing person would love just to pay on performance. Say, hey, if they sell this many bars of soap, you know, I will give them X amount of dollars. If they sell this many dish rags, I would give that much money. But I don't want to pay up front $10,000, $20,000 for this influencer who, yes, they have a large audience, but who knows how it's going to work?
Right.
I don't know. That's the guessing, right? And that's where the gap you're trying to fill.
I want to take the guesswork out of that entire conversation. It's funny because I come from the world. It's the biggest scattershot marketing platform there is. It's the out-of-home world. It's let me put a sign on a wall and hope somebody makes a phone call. And to tie those two together is incredibly hard. But, you know, that was a world that dealt in impressions, right? How many cars did we reach today? And then you go back to the business and you look at the bottom line. You go, we made $1 million. Well, how much is that, you know, how much is that affected by the billboard versus how much are my salespeople generating? Or can we actually just marry the two and understand that the billboard builds awareness? And I had a digital marketing teacher say, turn off your billboards and watch how fast your digital marketing dies. But can we just have that entire conversation and be proven at the end? So can we generate the impressions in the beginning, but to sort of what we're talking about here, measure the outcome along the way so that we can actually have some predictive revenue models for the end of the customer journey?
Right, right.
So yeah, getting away from some of the guesswork, but back to the influencers, I know we don't want to always talk about pay for performance, but I also look at that and say, on the converse, if an influencer has proven that they generate revenue, they should probably get a bigger percentage of the conversation and not just be paid for impressions. Humble opinion. May not be popular.
Well, then it comes down to the creative, right? So if I'm an influencer with, let's say, 1 million followers, and I'm in the fitness category, so a lot of what I put out there is fitness-related content, and then somebody comes along with the new widget to do a barbell or an ab belt or you name it, or any sort of green tea drink, and they come up to me, and you know my rate these days would be right around $20,000-$25,000 because I know I'm going to provide a lot more eyeballs than, let's say, television. And so, of course, the business is like, okay, based off of all the other people who have that we've done campaigns with, we can reasonably expect this much in revenue from that, you know. And the question would be, but is it going to work this time or what have you? You know, and some of it's based off of the talent of the person who's pushing your product.
Yep.
Some of it's based off of the time of year, the time of day. You know, going back to all these variables that go into people making business decisions, And what I've seen in social media is a lot more of the live selling. So people are going live stream and talking about products because that feels more of a connection for, like, if you have 1,000 people watching your live stream and you're pushing whatever you're pushing and you're demonstrating it and the benefits and the values, then you're much more likely to see a higher conversion rate than if you put it on your story or you put it in somewhere where you only got a 30-second to 1 minute, you know, capture rate.
What's interesting about that too is, I mean, I would love to see the stats on that because I think you're probably right. If someone's doing it live and they're demonstrating, it's almost like having it in your hands and being able to use it.
Right.
And
but then you're like QVC.
Yeah, you are. But that model worked for so long. I think it still does. I was going to say you can probably see the register ring while you do it. And then what I start to look at for what we want to do with Click360 is say, what happens after that? So if the behavior in the moment converts to revenue, good. That's a direct correlation, right? And we can prove that. We can see it. They bought it while we were live. Great. What if someone's like, that's an interesting product. I could see myself buying that, but I got to take my kid to soccer. Or now is not the time. And they come back 2 days, 3 days, 3 weeks later. It's still in their mind, but that behavioral pattern is what we start to need to measure because that person will now fall into the funnel of the abandoned cart syndrome or what have you. And we need to know, is that somebody we want to focus on now? So there's so many cool uses of AI that are like this where, you know, they try to measure in the exact moment that a purchase happens.
Yeah.
But what if they didn't? What if that conversion didn't happen? That's where we talk about that complex customer journey that doesn't happen here.
Yeah. So I have a 4-year-old and they're at the stage where they're learning. Yeah. They're learning all sorts of new things. Kind of a fun stage.
Very fun.
Also very time consuming as a parent. But with that, I'm constantly looking for different products to help them on their spelling, their reading, their math.
Yeah.
And I also spend a lot of time on TikTok. And what I've noticed is TikTok is definitely giving more influencers the ability to make commissions off of products that they demonstrate. One of the items that I recently purchased was this like nightlight stars.
I bought the same one. I have a 3-year-old. I bought the same one.
Okay. And what I'm noticing is my consumer behavior. So these are one-off products, right? You see it, you buy it. There's no adding to cart. It's like, oh, I like that. Good price point. What the heck? Why not? I don't even care if it comes in a week or 2 weeks, you know, because I figure it's coming from abroad. It's not like Amazon where you're going to get it the same day or next day.
Right.
But I'm okay with it. The price point's good. It's not a rush. I don't need it tomorrow. But then, okay, so I got hooked into buying this one really cool star light show. Then the second time, now that they know I'm buying for my 4-year-old son, they're like, wow, how about some writing tools to help him learn how to read and write? And with, you know, erasing ink. Yeah. And so like, I'm like, well, that's cool. So like you can go in and you start learning to trace different things. Okay. It's a higher price point to get me to buy that, but goes right in. And what's unique is that these are just one-off products. There's no adding to cart. Like you either want it, but what I noticed on that one is, so I spent some time looking at it and I was thinking about buying it. And now I was like, I don't know. Like it was like $40 and I was like, oh man, I don't know. And then I click through, right? I'm just scrolling through, like, nah, I'm not going to buy it now.
Yeah.
And so about the next day and the next day, I start seeing more videos from other influencers, other people demonstrating this product. And I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm just going to do it. Like, this is insane for me not to try this. This is like a really cool product. I liked it. Forget it. I'm just going to get it. And I got it yesterday and I had my son using it. And by and large, he liked it. Like his attention span, anytime I can get my son off the screen and off the device and doing different things, I feel like that's a parent win. It's a small win. But now my son is like having fun learning and reading and writing. And for me, TikTok is now learning my behavioral patterns. Okay, first product, we got him in the door, small price point. He bought right away. Second, this is a price point. Took him 2-3 days, but he bought.
Right.
He converted. They're starting to see that data of my shopping behavior on TikTok. And now I start to see the price point go up on a few things. And then even more products I'm seeing being pushed through my feed than ever before.
Well, yeah, and the AI is learning that, I mean, the AI now knows you have a 4-year-old and knows that you have a propensity to buy things for a child that age. And so they're going to change that algorithm and start showing you more things. And this is, goes back to that rules-based stuff. There's something interesting about that in and of itself that they'll start to extrapolate, hey, this is a person who has this, you know, aged child, and here's more products that tend to sell that well in those spaces. I'm trying to think where I was going with this. For those marketers who are using TikTok, now they want to go, what other channels can I use to impact John? And where else does he shop? And so they're going to try to figure out, how can we also affect him? They'll probably have an email address, I'm assuming, so we'll try some of that. What we were trying to do is just understand, you know, behavior on TikTok does not indicate behavior on Instagram, for example.
Or Amazon.
Exactly. And that's where we had to measure all the channels and all the behaviors across all the platforms and all the devices. I know what you reminded me of. Once you bought that particular toy, that Starlight, did you get more ads for that particular Starlight?
No.
Or did another advertiser also try to sell you the same Starlight?
No, I didn't actually see that too much anymore. I mean, like, that's for good. A day. And then it went away. And then I felt like they were pushing the higher price point, same category for my kid, but just a different product altogether. They're like, okay, cool, you bought that.
Good. Because what I was going to say is that is sort of the beginning of the AIs right now, where they go, John obviously buys Starlight, so let's show him every single Starlight that ever existed and hope that he buys another one. Or in the case of building audiences, they go, people like John like Starlights, therefore we're going to show him Starlights. And I only joke about this, and I can't remember if we talked about this before, but I bought a bed frame when we bought our house almost 2 years ago. And they've been trying to, on Facebook specifically, I've been getting bed frame ads for the past 2 years, because now I look like a high intent bed frame consumer. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you can have more than one, but how many does one person need? And the idea would be, instead of just retargeting anybody, or, by the way, buying an audience of high intent bed frame buyers, understand the nuance that Mike's already bought that bed frame. And it sounds like the Starlight company did a good job of going, what else will John buy? I wish some of these mattress companies, these bed frame companies, would go, well, we have other furniture too, Mike. Your behavior looks like you don't buy bed frames anymore. You haven't bought one in 2 years.
Or even just selling you the mattress pad.
Yeah.
The sheets.
Yeah.
And anything else that would go in a bedroom. Because redesign your bed frame, you probably want other things in your room as well. I mean, usually you're just not buying.
And take that behavior from saying this is a high intent bed frame buyer to all of a sudden that's a high intent mattress buyer.
Yeah.
Just understanding the nuance versus just saying everybody in this category's got to be super high intent because they bought one already.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? Great time for ChatGPT. They have a follow-up question for you. I know you don't get this too often for ChatGPT asking you questions, but go ahead.
Okay, so how does Click 360 quantify the return on investment for its clients? Can you share any measurables or outcomes of success?
This is the super, super easy one because, the crux of the platform is end-to-end attribution across the entire customer journey, across all platforms, channels, devices, and time, blah, blah, blah. The quantifiable is how much did we spend, how much did we return, and also were we able to reduce spend to acquire the same person, right? Customer acquisition costs and margin. So you can actually prove out we spent this, we earned this, and we can see it down to each and every individual click that influences sale, how much that brought in revenue-wise and which channels generated that revenue so we can do the ROI calculations down to the penny. Some of the more interesting conversations were where we had different customers, they were all mostly in e-commerce, but there have been a few SaaS where they had a business model of let's retarget anybody just because. And if they hit the website, they got an offer. If they opened a cart, they got a retarget. And just the ability to dial that back and say, here's what the entire customer journey looks like. So, you know, this channel performs best top of funnel, this channel best middle of funnel, this best at the bottom of funnel. You can start to take some of the other channels out or at least stop overpaying for them. because they're the platforms that sell you ads will sell you what they consider the highest intent ads, and they will charge you for it because they know those people have been searching recently for what you sell. So to be able to say, I don't need to buy every single ad on every single channel and retarget every single person when I'm just going to target these five people on these channels, not these five. Let's pretend there's more than five people. But if I only target the people that are going to convert in the channels that make the convert, and I don't have to spend all these extra gobs of money to do so, then you can alleviate a lot of the marketing spend, or as I would say, reallocate it to the channels that do bring you money. But yes, the ROI is easy to measure on that.
So do you feel like you're kind of outsmarting like Google Ads and or AdWords and Meta ad platform? Because ultimately, I meet with a lot of small and medium-sized companies and who are spending advertising dollars on these different platforms.
Yeah.
And the biggest complaint is, I don't know what I'm doing. Like they and I feel like they intentionally make it difficult to advertise on these platforms. Because they just want you to spend a bunch of money and they'll give you just enough of a win and to get a couple sales. It's almost like my golf game. Like I just have one hit during my nine holes and then I'm like, yeah, I could play golf. I could do this. Yeah. So you're like, you get a couple sales through one ad campaign terrible. And you're like, oh, this isn't that bad. I like this.
Yeah.
And you keep going. But the question is, would an ad platform like this to you to use this technology, or is it somewhere where you're buying different customer lists or what have you to really hone in on this data, in order to outsmart the system?
We're not outsmarting the system. I think all these tools really work in harmony to an end. And then that's why I say we're not outsmarting the system. Every single platform sits at its proper point in the customer journey to affect outcome. And so a lot of the bigger companies you mentioned, like Meta, Google, et cetera, are very, very, very good at creating audiences, right? Because they've got whoever has the most eyeballs wins, whoever generates the most impressions wins, whoever can build the biggest audience. And these platforms are really good at building audience. And they've got, the largest groups of audiences to build from.
Yeah.
And they, let's not mince words, they know a lot about the people in those audiences, who they are, where they live, what they like, how they shop.
Sure.
And so Click360 doesn't, it's not going to compete with their ability to build an audience. We're just going to measure an outcome. So a marketer will start with a marketing campaign and they'll target an audience who is a high likelihood audience to be, buyers of their product.
Yeah.
All we want to do is help them once that person has shown up on that website to say, here's a buyer, here's not.
Right.
Here's a high probability conversion. Here's a low probability conversion. Here's the channel that improves these outcomes.
Yep.
We're not going to outsmart these guys because it's not, frankly, in our cards, and it's not something we would ever want to do.
Yeah.
Because you talk about, gobs of data, they've got more than anybody.
Right, right.
But so much more than I do about, how those buying structures work and how they pay for it and what they give you on that end. We just want to help the marketer on the back end to say, this is where we want to spend our time once we get them to the site. Somebody still has to get them there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that's where Ask Clever, what we're doing is we are using different ad budgets and then taking our data where we are plugging that into a lookalike audience or what have you on Google AdWords or on Facebook ads and trying to really cut the spend in order to get the most efficient use of your dollars. So if we can increase your revenue by 10, 20, 30% or more by just based off of what we are doing, then, that is a good thing.
Right.
And that's the value of using different technology. Like, quite honestly, that didn't even exist like a few years ago. This is all brand new. And I feel like it's leveling the playing field. At least what we're doing within our company is leveling the playing field that now you can compete with the big boys, because the big boys always had access to lots of data.
Yeah.
Always could see this on a big data spend, like whether you work at Best Buy Corporate or Target Corporate or you're at Capital One, and can see the trends at a very, very, very large level. But hey, if you own an Airbnb or you own, you know, your own little retail store, it's also hard for you to kind of zero in on some of these trends of what and behaviors.
Yeah, and to your point too, be much more even localized, so you don't have to buy an entire audience that's the entire country. You can just buy, you know, a city up the road.
And right.
If you only sell in a 5-mile radius of your building, there's no sense in buying the entire state.
Right.
It's like TV. You used to have to buy, you know, if you wanted coverage of everywhere, you had to buy national broadcasts. You know, so now you're talking about, can we just market to the individuals, not who are only most likely to buy from us, but are closest to us? Because, right, what if we have a physical store somebody's got to come to?
Right. So to that point, you know, if you've got a digital billboard, you are covering everybody within that geographic location, mm-hmm. and 95 to 99% of the people who drive by that billboard, yeah, they might fit the demographic of, you know approximately mm-hmm. where they live, you know, approximately, you know, what an income is to support that house or that yeah. real estate over on that side of town. But 99% of the people does not apply. You know, right. versus if you are pinpointing digitally online, looking at that buyer behavior, you know, well, this person is more likely to buy your product in that neighborhood where a billboard would be, but also in all the other neighborhoods across,
right.
you know, a metro area. And that's what the whole point is, to leverage that.
Well, this is why I said we're not going to compete with some of those large platforms, and I'm not going to disparage other platforms that do that, because what they're doing is something that we cannot, is they're starting the conversation with the highest likelihood people to convert.
Yeah.
You know, so to your billboard example there, you know, that's, let's capture everybody.
Right.
Versus what you're able to do with what you're doing is say, I know that if I start with this audience in this channel, in this general vicinity.
Yeah.
These are the people that shop at this store or right, buy right. this product. And we're never going to do that. We're only going to say from, you know, website forward, which of those guesses was most correct.
Right. So where do you think AI is going to influence what you're doing? Let's say 6 months down the road, 12 months down the road. I mean, I'm sure you see the same articles that I see and all the different AI news sites. What are your thoughts about the direction over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months? Yeah. It's kind of hard to predict any further out because it is scaling up so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's getting smarter. But where do you see, like, for what you're doing, where do you think that's going with AI?
To the part about getting smarter, I've listened to a couple of panelists, and one person said what I think is going to be, I'm stealing from him what he thought was going to be the thing that yeah. I think is probably going to be a huge part of it, marketing and everything else.
Yeah.
Is that the AI tools are going to become, what's a good way to explain this? They're going to become your coworker. So you can actually ask the platform a question and it will go ahead and do the analysis of the data and give you a real world human answer.
Okay. So like what job did you have in college?
College, I built websites and, you know, did nothing else.
You did? You built websites in college?
I built websites.
On what platform or like, what did you use?
All HTML back then.
Okay. And so you built websites. So if you were your like 20-year-old self,
mm-hmm.
what AI tools would you be using today to help your 20-year-old self back then?
God, I don't even know if it exists. And I know that coders tend to say generative AI writes bad code. So that probably wouldn't be it. But it would be the idea, like, to ask the platform, what is the proper coding structure for a table? And it will say, here it is, right? Instead of having to go and look for that at a, you know, on a website building resource, you can just ask the platform, how do I do that thing? And so to what this person was speaking about, for example, they were talking about startups and having to, you know, hire their first few employees or even bring on C-suite level employees. He said, you know, I think very soon startups will have a CFO built into some platform, their financial platform. So they go, hey, where do I expense this on taxes? And it'll tell them. And so what I think is going to work be super interesting for us is to be able to ask the platform, why are my Facebook ads doing so much better this month than last month?
Yeah.
And it will say because of thing A, B, and C.
But what are you doing? Like when you were doing a website, just to get back to you.
Yeah. When I'm you not were, that interesting.
You, but when you were doing your websites when you were like 20s,
yeah.
Like, were you doing design?
I mean, I was doing it. I'm not going to say they were good. They were very utilitarian, but they functioned.
Okay, so but you were doing it
yeah.
for your clients.
Yeah.
So have you used the ChatGPT DALL-E image generator? Have you tried that out?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. What are you, what are your thoughts? Because like for the our Ask Clever Over Coffee podcast, this is all generated by ChatGPT.
I like it.
Yeah, and these coffee cups, got them at Walgreens. Shout out to Walgreens. There you go. And everybody who sees it is like, dang, that's amazing. You didn't have to pay anybody for logo design or anything like that. I'm like, no, this is the ChatGPT 4. You do have to pay
yeah.
for the ChatGPT 4. And very impressed with ChatGPT. So thank you, ChatGPT, for doing that. But very impressed with the level of design. And it took me some different iterations of learning how to prompt.
Yep.
Because the text was in. So like when you are 20 years old and you're designing websites, how do you think AI could have helped you become better at what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, you for sure would have queried it and said things like, can you create this logo for me, or can you create this design for me, or what do people in this industry generally talk about? That is one of my more favorite use cases of the ChatGPT, is asking it what keeps marketers up at night. Right? What are the 10 most important things to a RevOps leader, and having it bring that together? So to your point about building websites, how can I make this website speak to XYZ demographic? Can you make me a graphic that looks like this, this, and this? All right. Can you dial that back? Can you turn this up? Can you make it a little softer? Yeah. I mean, I could for sure see where that would have applied.
Or even just writing the right copy.
Yeah.
Let's say you're not an excellent copywriter, and maybe back in the day, I'm assuming at 20 years old, you're not the most proficient at the copywriting.
Best. The best.
And going into ChatGPT and just asking, hey, SEO optimize this website page using these keywords, and then it just outputs in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
And then you're editing from there and moving things around the page. I would think that would greatly help you as a 20-year-old going from like a real novice to actually having some legitimate, worthwhile, relevant skill set there.
Yeah. And as the AIs continue to learn, evolve, and get better, instead of just saying, like, let's say you were building I built websites for the hockey team, our own hockey team back in college. And instead of saying, make this SEO optimized for hockey teams, and having it just saying hockey is important to hockey because hockey, right? It's learned through time that, the way to actually have conversation is to embed the keyword in an interesting topic in a proper sentence structure. And so
right.
it's gotten so much better. So yeah, that would have been a really good use case. I wish I had it. I didn't. I should go find those pages, see what they actually sounded like.
Well, I mean, the point is that I'm trying to show here is just like trying to give some real life examples yeah. of like how you started out your, like adulthood and doing different mundane jobs and how would AI influence? Because quite frankly, I also have an 18-year-old and he's coming into the workforce and he's trying to figure things out and he's using AI to reach out to prospective jobs in yep. different ways using LinkedIn, but he's using AI to write all the copy.
Yep.
And when you're first starting out and you don't have a lot of experience, but you've done different things, wow, does it really change the game and how you present yourself and how you're yep. talking about your own skill set? And I'm like, holy smokes, you're light years ahead. And then I'm also just wondering how many young people are using this? I honestly don't even know, but I was just curious, like again, using in real life examples for you and yourself.
I think since I lived most of my life in sales and technically we're all still in it, I think a really good way to look at it, for people listening today too, is salespeople have this great way of hitting you with a very boring email that says, here's what I sell. Here's why I'm selling it. Here's why you want it. And it doesn't sort of communicate, where there's a lot of really good AI tools to say, and you mentioned prompts, write this sales email as though you're writing to a CMO who has this problem and our tool does this thing. And it should be able to take that and make a lot more compelling conversational email and say, here's the value proposition. Here's what people like you have solved for with this tool. Here's why that's a big deal. And just be a lot less salesy.
Well, and so going to that point, if you're watching or listening, here's a little tip that I've learned over 20 years of doing this, is that actually if in the ad you put the pain or the problem,
yeah,
people will go, oh, yeah, yeah, I have that pain too. Tell me more. And they'll click on it. Or they'll respond to the ad. You don't even have to talk about your features and benefits. Just say, hey, were you recently in a storm and have hail damage?
Yeah.
Call us to find out more about a free home inspection. Yeah, I was in a storm. Yeah, that's good. You know, like where you identify the key problem.
Yep.
People identify like that. That's not selling. That's literally like, hey, did you have this happen to you?
Yeah, it's allowing people to buy. It's your point. It's acknowledging the problem exists.
You want a response.
Yeah, and saying, here's how big this problem is, and here's how, when people solve this problem, here's the outcome they've had. Does this sound like you? And if it does, great. If not, no problem.
Right.
But yeah, it's just, I think the generative stuff is getting a lot better at that, especially if you can prompt it correctly. In fact, I had a friend who wrote a scathing email to... I think it was an appliance company when her appliance broke down, and she goes and change it to sound like a legal action and rewrites it to sound like it's being sent by a lawyer, gets a better response. So,
and that's really the key here is the prompt engineering, the knowing how to work with the AI,
right,
or ChatGPT or whatever platform you're using these days, because there's multiple now.
Right.
And really trying to get the most out of it for the direction you're trying to head towards.
Yeah.
And that's what we're like learning a brand new language. And what I'm hoping with this podcast and everybody who's watching or listening is that you have questions that you reach out to Mike on LinkedIn is probably the best way, because that's how I communicate with you. That's the best way.
I live there.
Yep. Mike Louie Lewis. Find him on LinkedIn. And ask these questions about how to use the AI tools to help you get what you're looking for. And I know one of the reasons that you're on the podcast is really to help educate other people who are going through different things and like learning what to do and how to use these tools. And that's what this podcast does. That if you wanted to reach out to us, go to Ask Clever on any of the social platforms or write to askclever.ai on our website, set up an appointment, meet with me. I would love to help you guys out with whatever your business challenge is, because that's fun to me.
Agreed. And, you know, to get beyond AI for AI's sake, I think everyone's talking about it right now because it is the topic du jour. And I think platforms are embedding it in their platform because it's the embed du jour. And understanding the difference, if you want to know about AI, call that guy. But also ask the questions about why. Why are we putting AI into everything? Is it needed in this platform? Is it going to your point about, does it solve a problem? And if not, then it's just AI.
Well, and the other thing is, it's interesting to see how AI is evolving our culture right now. Like literally, whether you're watching politics or you're leaning left or you're leaning right, and you're starting to see deep fakes in videos and different things in your feeds, and you're starting to have to educate yourself. Like I noticed even on TikTok, before you post a video, it asks you, is this computer generated or not? And you have to click a checkbox on whether or not. Because they're trying to educate people to know what are they seeing, is this real or not? You know, and it's really fascinating. Like we had a guest on here on a previous episode that was talking about Snapchat. Now, Snapchat is a social media platform I don't use, but I know it, and my son uses it all the time. Like his soccer coaches and different people, they've always used Snapchat to communicate with teams because young people, that's what they use. And I just learned that Snapchat has an AI tool. I did not know that they had an AI tool.
Yeah.
But if you are struggling to, let's say, even like meet somebody of the opposite sex or the same sex or somebody you're interested in, and you could use the AI tool to help write the intro of how to reach out and talk to people. And it's very fascinating how AI is influencing our communication and the way we communicate with each other.
And they say once something makes it on TV, like a sitcom or a cartoon, it's actually, you know, it's very real. And there was an entire episode of South Park dedicated to one of the kids writing notes to his girlfriend with AI.
No kidding.
Yeah. And, you know, she's swooning over the content because it's good content, right?
Okay.
But he's just saying, text back, and just walks away. It's probably incredibly real.
Well, if you think back, like, I've helped people, like, when they're trying to meet somebody in real world.
Yeah.
Or they're trying to get, you know, for my example, one of my buddies is trying to get a girl that he's interested in to notice him. And he's like, what do I buy? What do I say? Where do I go? Where do I take her? All these different things. And so in this example, like I'm telling him, hey, you buy this type of flowers, you take her to this type of restaurant or a coffee shop, you go here and, do these things and it will help you. And now, instead of like you're asking your buddy how to do it, you're asking an AI chatbot how to do the same thing. And it's really interesting is the person you're interested in liking you for you or liking just the tools you're using?
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's the question, you know, going back to the original part of the conversation is that information actionable or is it transactional? Is the ChatGPT saying buy flowers? Because historically that's what you do when you want to, when you're interested in something.
Yeah.
Versus this particular person wants you to buy, I have no good example. My mind said turtles because, you know. But I'm saying, like, for the specific person you are interested in, there is going to be something specifically they would like from you.
Right.
Where I wonder if, like, a ChatGPT or whatnot would just say, here is the most common thing you would give to somebody you're interested in.
Right.
And ignoring the nuance.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this leads us into a new segment on Ask Clever Over Coffee. And hopefully you are enjoying out of your Ask Clever Over Coffee.
Oh, yeah.
New mug that we have. We have some merch on the show now. And we are doing the segment called Fast Five with AI. And we have five questions that we're going to ask you, or ChatGPT is going to ask you. And it's all right. One word answers. One word, Fast Five with AI. Mike, are you ready?
Me and Fast Five never work, so let's do it.
Okay, so the first buzzword is integration. Office or home, where do you encounter AI more?
Office.
Second, preference, chatbots or human customer service?
Human customer service. Sorry, three words.
Futurism, self-driving cars, exciting or terrifying?
Mixed.
Good answer. Everyday AI, voice assistants, useful or intrusive?
Useful and intrusive. Just need to know how intrusive they are.
That was more than one word.
I know. Good.
Personal touch, AI in personal life, innovation or intrusion?
Innovation.
All right. You were the first one to play our game.
And I did poorly.
And you didn't follow the rules at all. So I want any future guests to really watch and not take...
follow the rule.
What Mike was doing here, I'd say that's how you do it. But, you know, I appreciate you for playing the game.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you coming on the podcast, talking to people, educating them on what's going on in AI in your business and sales and marketing. And if people want to follow you or follow up with you, Mike, where do they find you?
Like you said, best place to find me is on LinkedIn, Mike Louie Lewis. I should pop right away. Otherwise, you can always email me at mike.lewis@click360.io.
Nice. All right. And we will put some links in the different socials that we are pushing.
Perfect.
So if you're following us on Ask Clever on any of the socials, you should be able to see the tags to Mike, and you would be able to find him that way as well. And to leave the podcast on the last note of the episode of this episode, you know, the world has got a lot of moving parts and it's a little shaky at best when you're watching on the socials or online or, you know, watching TV. And one of the purposes is not only just to educate people on AI, but is also to just put a little bit of positivity into the air. So every show I ask ChatGPT, what is the quote that we should leave the show on? And I know that generally Billy's reading it, but I like to do this one myself. And I asked, hey, what's a beautiful and fitting quote about kindness to end the podcast? And this is by Maya Angelou. It is. I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. Thanks for watching and listening. And till next time, we'll see you here on Ask Clever Over Coffee, How AI Built This.